The sweet sound of sports you love from Sling. The collide of football pads. The squeak of shoes on a basketball court. The crack of the bat on a home run. The slice of skates cutting across the ice. But what about this one? That's the sound of all the sports you love, all at once. Starting at $40 a month. Experience it all live with Sling. Sling.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another edition of the Friday live stream. I'm used to being at nighttime. Friday live stream right here on Owen Texas Football. Appreciate you guys joining us. We got a lot to get into. Of course, I'm also joined by the man, CJ Vogel, lifetime Longhorn, but he's becoming a legend in recruiting circles because of his legendary work ethic, always been on the grind. But you settled down now. Are you at the crib? Are you hanging out back at the house with your peeps?
That's right. No, Mother's Day's coming up. I'm back home in Allen. I mean, y'all see the childhood room, you know. I got all the figurines, you know, all the stuff.
Is that really your room? Is it still intact and everything?
They haven't touched a thing. It looks identical, you know. It's good stuff in here.
That is legit, folks. That's why we love CJ. That's kind of wild right there. That I think I want to say my mom kept my room pretty much intact while I was in college. But I want to say one of the years I came back from the league, that thing was done. It was something else. I was like, what's going on here? It was like, oh no, we're moving on. All my stuff was kind of packed and ready for me. They had already moved on. So it's gonna happen, CJ. One day you're gonna go back there, your feelings gonna be hurt because your room ain't gonna be what it was. Like, what's going on?
I'm waiting on that day to come because I'm sure it's soon. I'm sure they're sick of having to keep it up and everything. But so far I'm loving it because it's giving me a place to sleep whenever I'm up here in Dallas.
Oh, no, man. That is great. All right. Good stuff there. All right. Thank you guys for joining us. Please get in all of your questions. We'll answer as many of them as we can. We appreciate you guys helping us build this community. That's exactly what it is. We'll get to the EA Sports. I don't know if it was a sneak release of the cover of the new college football game. We'll get into that too because Texas gets a little love there as well. They should. So we'll talk about that. Also, Jermaine Lole, more discussion about the latest transfer portal acquisition by the Longhorns at the defensive tackle position. So we'll get into that a little bit too coming up on the show. And also Pro Football Focus is ranking basically the programs that have the most players at each position on NFL rosters right now. And the Longhorns are represented, but not represented well enough. But I got a feeling over the next 3-4 years, we're going to see the Longhorns start to populate a lot of those different rankings about players at different positions in the league and who has the most at certain positions. So we'll get into that coming up a little bit later on in the show. But let's start with, I don't know if people have seen it. I know you have seen it, CJ. But there was a EA Sports kind of sneak release of the new cover of the college football video game. Yeah, here, the deluxe edition. Now, I don't know if I'm assuming they're going to have some other editions too, but the deluxe edition, this is how it looks, allegedly. I mean, this was said it was sneak release. There's still right now a countdown actually happening as we speak on the EA Sports website. And I believe that's the countdown of the actual release of the video game and the cover of the video game. But right now, this is a sneak release we have. CJ, if this is indeed going to be the cover of a deluxe edition of College Football 2025, what are your thoughts about it? You can see how they laid it out there. I kind of like it. What are your thoughts?
I like it. I think this is cool. And I think it encapsulates a lot of players. Of course, with the first game coming back, I mean, you want it to be as inclusive to every fan, every sport, every team, every program that you can, right? It's going to be highly anticipated. A lot of folks are really excited that this game is coming back, myself included. I'm going to spend days, maybe even weeks, probably months, if I'm being honest, playing this game. And so to kind of build it up, and I mean, they always throw some Easter eggs in here. Of course, you see Quinn Edwards, the running back from Michigan, and Travis Hunter on the front. I like that. And you see Jalen Milroe in the back. Listen, it's cool because you kind of get an idea of who they think are going to be the big dogs. You know, Carson Beck's in there as well. I was actually surprised they threw Quinshon Judkins up in the front. You know, Ohio State has plenty of talented players right now. For a guy that just arrived from Ole Miss, a bit surprising to see him on the cover like this. But I'm sure with different additions, we talked about that potentially the NCAA having a cover athlete for each conference. So each conference would have its own addition, and who that would be for each conference. I mean, if Quinn's, you know, that first guy on the board right there for the deluxe version,
that's
hard to imagine he's not the guy for, you know, the SEC edition. But no, this is really cool. It's also, I know Texas fans are going to have a lot of fun with this because you look all the way in the back, and let's see if I can zoom in on this a little bit more.
I know. I see it. Yeah.
Let's see who we got in the back. We got Ohio State, Iowa. That looks like Kansas State, Michigan doubling back, Notre Dame doubling back, Nebraska, and Auburn. You know who you don't see in there?
Uh-oh.
I'm just someone who makes observations.
Say it.
I don't see Texas A&M, and I don't see Oklahoma. But I see Clemson here. You got Florida, BYU. That looks like Florida State in the middle. And, of course, Oregon, Arizona on the right. But, hey, Texas has a front cover. So you can't complain there, especially when the biggest rivals aren't even visible on the deluxe version. I'm sure Texas fans are enjoying that victory parade at the moment on the cover day release.
Man, I like the concept of it. It's really cool. No Shedeur Sanders on there either. I'm sure Deion. You got Travis Hunter, so you do have, you know, representation of the team, but you don't have Shedeur Sanders. So a lot of people think also is going to be one of the better players, a high draft pick coming up.
I'm surprised by that.
Yeah, nope. I mean, but you know what? I don't know. Maybe there ain't no telling what Shedeur Sanders and Deion, ain't no telling what they asked for. And ain't no telling they might have not wanted to do something controversial. I don't know. Cause that is a little controversial, I guess, with Shedeur Sanders, just because Deion and Shedeur are controversial. I guess Travis Hunter is representation of the program and a lot safer bet in terms of, I don't know, maybe less volatile. Something crazy happened. That is where they went.
Rod, we talked about each conference having its own individual cover edition. I got one for the Big 12. The referees. I mean, that's got to be it. It's either that photo or the one with all the flags on the field and referees looking around. But that's got to be the Big 12 one, man.
That is fantastic. That is great. Oh, man. So that's fitting too, man, because the Big 12, I had fun in the league. It's a good football league, but it is a horribly officiated league. There ain't no question about that. We experienced that. Texas was on the benefiting end of that, but also Texas obviously was on the unnecessary ends of some of those officiating ineptitude. They were on the losing end of some of those too. So out of the Big 12 and into the SEC. All right, let's get to a couple of questions here. We'll also get to some of the topics that I want to dive into. I want to talk a little bit about the Pro Football Focus rankings about players. Hey, thank you guys for joining us. The players at different positions and how many programs have the most players at certain positions, offense and defense. Also, I want to get into the Jermaine Lole. I want to get your thoughts about him a little bit more, talk about where he fits in this rotation of defensive tackles. But here's from Noah. Noah says, talk that Texas could actually have three spots left means someone isn't on scholarship, someone coming in isn't on scholarship but is using NIL to pay for college. Could we expect to use all three spots? Are they at 82 or 83 officially, and do we know, CJ?
Yeah, so the count that I posted up earlier on Texas Football has Texas at 83. Now, Texas could be looking to add more beyond that 85 scholarship limit, and if that is the case, that means that, one, a punter might be on scholarship, or two, someone that they added via the portal this earlier offseason is not going to technically be on scholarship, but will be kind of on what I'll call a green shirt, if you will. The NCAA, of course, have red shirts, the blue shirts, the black shirts, whatever it is. I'll call it a green shirt in the sense of they're getting scholarship money via NIL. That's what we'll call it. So they will be compensated duly, as you would for a scholarship player. They just might not pick up a true scholarship spot. So it's between 82 and 83, which leads Texas to have a couple of options to go in where they might fill out the rest of that 85-man scholarship limit for the 2024 season. Of course, I think linebacker could be a spot they go out and add a grad transfer prospect. Of course, safety's been a spot mentioned in the past as well. Texas has already added three guys on the defensive line, so do they need to go back and shore that up? Maybe. If they do, I think it would be for a younger cat. Right now, Johnny Bowens has been the name that we've seen kind of tossed around a little bit. Of course, I think Jerry mentioned it earlier today on Coffee and Football. He'd probably have to hit the books a little bit harder for that to become a true marriage of Johnny Bowens and the Texas Longhorns. So we'll see. But right now, 82 to 83 is exactly where Texas sits inside their scholarship limit at the moment. Of course, we are really looking forward to seeing how Jermaine Lalay and Bill Norton look whenever they arrive on campus June 3rd.
Man, already added three defensive tackles. Prospect of adding another one. It is – Fasarki said it after the spring game that he wanted more big humans in the interior D-line. That was his biggest concern after the spring game. Even lately, he's reiterated that his biggest concern about the team being big humans in the interior D-line. So there's no doubt if he goes out there and they target another interior defensive tackle, that would say – that would double down, reaffirm that – there's no doubt losing Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy, losing those guys on top of the unproven commodities they have now in the interior D-line, it really did have an effect on Sark. And he believes if there anything could derail what Texas has in store in 2024, that it would be teams being able to run on Texas and the lack of a stout rush defense as a result of that interior D-line. So if they're still targeting interior D-line after all having all of these acquisitions, it says a lot about what he, at least what they thought and the confidence they have in the guys that were already there, or the lack thereof, maybe I'm saying.
Yeah, and also to the point, and I mentioned this earlier on Texas Football as well. I think I even tweeted it. When you look at who the people are in this room, Texas could be seeing up to five guys depart from the defensive line position by itself. And I know that they've got some young cats. You know, Sadir Mitchell's expected to take a jump. Dre Bledsoe, Aaron Bryant. Yep. We liked what we saw from Alex January. But that's a lot to entrust on a brand new group of guys moving into the SEC year two with what you expect to, you know, potentially add with three to four guys out of the high school class in 2025. So it would make sense for Texas to want to go out and find a younger cat at that position just to ensure that, hey, yeah, this guy's been in the college weight room for two off seasons. He understands what it's like. He's going to have his feet wet with college football already. He knows what it takes to be a player a week in, week out, going to film the classes, to workouts, and then eventually hopping on the plane Thursday night, getting out there for Friday, and then playing the game Saturday, whatever it is. But that to me screams that Texas might just be looking for a guy for 2025 more so than this year, in the sense that, yeah, we've got to get that room ready to essentially move these guys up from the minors to the pros without having to sit back and rebuild and see the product on the field deteriorate.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. It seems like they maybe that's a long-term strategy along with a short-term strategy to address the defensive tackle position. I agree with you on that too. Is it possible the defensive backfield is something they could also look to, look to target in the transfer portal? Is it possible, or is there anybody that they are even interested in?
I think it would have to be a good fit, and I think it would have to be, in my eyes at least, a veteran fit. Texas added five guys from the high school ranks this past offseason. And then they went out and got Javion Cole, who's got multiple years of eligibility remaining, and Andrew Makuba, who does too, but you don't expect him to necessarily be around in college all too long. He's already been a three-year starter at Clemson. How much more do you need to see from him? I think he's headed to the league regardless. But to that point, Texas is looking pretty good in that secondary for future years. You know, you look at Xavier Filsimi, Jordan Johnson-Rubel, Kobe Black, Wardell Mack, Santana Wilson. It's a really good group. And I think with what you have kind of already in the fold with Manny Muhammad and Derek Williams, the minute those guys become upperclassmen is when you start to worry a little bit about future years. With those guys still being sophomore and freshman at the moment, I think you sit back and you say, all right, we're good for now. We're good for the future. We'll address that in a year or two whenever these guys start aging a little bit. But right now, I think they're fine at the secondary spot. Could they add another guy for depth purposes? Maybe. That cornerback room not necessarily is up to par with, I think, a couple other rooms on the defensive side of the ball. We've talked about the bodies at defensive tackle. The edge room is looking like one that will certainly have a number of viable options for the fall. I look at linebacker and cornerback as a place where maybe you see them go out, get a grad transfer, someone to come in and just be another body just in case. They don't have to be a frontline guy. They don't have to be a guy that sees 15 or even 30 snaps a game. But someone who, in the sense that you lose a Gavin Holmes, you lose a Javion Cole, you have someone in that room that has seen snaps, that has seen a power five field before.
Yeah. No, you're right about that. I think at secondary, they are confident the young guys potentially could add the depth. The guys they literally just brought in. Some of those young guys in this defensive backfield class, and then some of the guys who, like your Jelani McDonald's coming in, between Gavin Holmes and Javion Cole, that should be the depth at one corner. With Malik Muhammad, I'm not sure they're going to have behind Malik Muhammad if they continue to boundary in the field. Maybe that's where one of the young guys steps up. Maybe that's a young Kobe Black if they like him that much or something like that. Be interesting to see which one of those young guys steps up. A lot of folks talking in the chat about the Josh Pate interview. Yeah, we did. I saw the Josh Pate interview. So did CJ. Ryan wants to talk about it. Josh Pate did a great interview with Sark. Austin American Statesman did one too. Yeah, Nick, we saw the interviews with Sark. We actually brought up those interviews, and we're going to talk about them in our Saturday conversation a little bit more in depth. Thank you, David, Keith Williams, too, and thank you guys. So we'll dive into it a little bit more in depth, but they were really good interviews. Sark isn't on the talking tour, and I thought he brought up a lot of different things that were really interesting. One of the things I really liked about the interview that I wrote down was really just Sark's overall, and in my notes here, Sark's overall view of his transition into the SEC when he was asked about, hey, what are the biggest adjustments you're going to make transitioning? And everybody talks about the line of scrimmage and everything, but he talked about the familiarity with the teams and the ecosystem of familiarity with the Big 12 and knowing the coaches, knowing their coaching styles, knowing their tactics, knowing exactly how those coaches want to operate their brand of football. And you almost build like a database. You almost build almost your own file database on every coach and every team. You don't throw away that research when you got to face those teams year after year. I mean, that almost like I have all these papers here all around me. You don't throw away that research. That research goes in the database, boom, and you use that and you build your game plans based on all that compiled knowledge and sample size. And he's talking about now I got to start over, basically. I got to start over with that. I had been there, going on his fourth year in the Big 12. Hey, man, that's as a coach, you become more of a seasoned veteran. Remember, I still believe that when PK was struggling as a defensive coordinator when he first got to the Big 12, when Gary Patterson came in as the assistant to the head coach, I think Gary Patterson gave him the cliff notes on the Big 12. I think Gary Patterson was like, oh, man, listen, I got the database on all the coaches. I got the cliff notes on all these guys. These are kind of the coverages. These are the different pressure packages. These are the things that in the Big 12 that'll work a little bit more. I think he gave him the cliff notes of it. And I think from then on, PK kind of understood the league a little bit better. I'm not saying PK wouldn't have gotten there, but I think he was able to accelerate PK's understanding of a new ecosystem in the Big 12. And I do think it takes a while. So that adjustment in the SEC, that's something I didn't think about. But Sark said, yeah, you got to basically build that database all over again. Now, he knows some of these coaches. He knows Lane Kiffin. He's coached against Kalen DeBoer twice, you know, but he doesn't have to play Bama. But so with some of these coaches, maybe he already started kind of building that. But that's something new that I didn't really think about, but it does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and luckily for Sark, I mean, SEC coaches are in the same boat to figure him out. And I think coaches a little bit like Matt Campbell, I know the Oklahoma State staff had some success with the cover three look. But you've talked about in the past, Rob, Texas has figured that out in a way that they can put 30 points on the board against those kind of cover three looks that have given Sarkisian trouble in the past. SEC defenses don't necessarily run that kind of that look, that scheme. And so it's going to be up to them to find what works rather than, you know, kind of looking across the table at the Big 12 luncheon dinner and figuring out, oh, yeah, how'd you guys get Texas off the field five times? You know, that seemed to work. You know, we got them week four. Help us out here. That's not going to be something that SEC coaches are going to be able to do because, of course, Texas played Alabama 2 years for the last 2 years. They Nick Saban no longer a part of it. They've played Kalen DeBoer. They don't play Kalen DeBoer this year. So it's going to be brand new. So while it's a two-way road here, coaches are going to have to figure out Sarkisian and PK and their tendencies. While also it's going to be a brand new path for these guys to figure out what Kentucky does well, what Mississippi State does well, what makes Georgia click despite all the talent. I mean, it makes a lot of sense for these guys to have their own kind of niche approaches to games and maybe unveil some things that we haven't seen normally in the past. I think that's going to be a little bit, you know, fun for these coaches to see just how, you know, in tune they are with their position groups. And as Sark says, you know, we've got a lot of different ways that we can come out and beat guys, whether it be 12 personnel, the pony package, 21, you know, we can go empty for all that we care. We've got the horses. It's all about how we feel comfortable to attack opposing defenses. And I think it's going to be really encouraging and interesting more than anything to see just how they deploy their weapons to fit a week-to-week game plan against new coaches.
Yeah, especially when styles of football, you know, they could vary so much, right? You got Michigan that's going to be playing bully ball or hardball ball without Jim Harbaugh. You got, you know, Lane Kiffin has his own version of the spread offense, loves the RPO game. You're going to have Kalen DeBoer with his sophisticated passing game, which you know very well, but he's bringing that with him to the SEC and to Bama. So they'll be spreading things out and throwing it a lot, and he's a brilliant offensive mind. So, yeah, the SEC, I mean, all of the – actually, the two major Power Five conferences now, they added two of the most – I mean, with Texas and Oklahoma, but even with the Big Ten, you're talking about Washington and bringing in USC, bringing in some really prolific offenses to infuse into those leagues too. So I think that's for the SEC, you could have a lot of variety you have to face week to week in terms of the approaches. And for PK, I think actually it's going to be important that they are a defense that, you know, can adjust to all the different styles of play. I think that's why Sark wants to make sure, and he's confident in the secondary's ability to cover when they have to play teams that are going to throw the football and try to expose them that way. I think he's most worried about teams that want to run the football in the SEC. That's pretty obvious based on him. Yeah, he brought that up too, right, in the Josh Pate interview, getting the big bodies. He's been, you know, adamant, and he's been reiterating that over and over again in the offseason. So when he's looking forward, it's pretty obvious. He thinks teams are going to try to run on him.
I agree.
He thinks teams are going to try to pound the rock against Texas. Otherwise, why have this urgency, CJ, in the offseason that, now we're going to stockpile as many big bodies. Not like you haven't already had the big bodies. Like you said, you got some guys there. You got and there's a question, too, here. Nick says, for D-tackle, I'm surprised nobody really talked about Bryant. He had a very good spring game. His hands and footwork are much better. Yeah, I mean, they got some guys there at the defensive tackle position. And even adding one or two guys, but then they added three, and hell, they could add another one, as you said, just looking at future prospects for it, long-term, short-term strategy. I think Sark is telling us with his actions, we're going to the SEC, just when you're reverse engineering game plans against yourself and self-scouting, he's like, man, I'd run the ball against us. I'd run the ball against Texas. I'd try to expose that young buck, Anthony Hill. I don't want to drop back. I don't want to worry about them edges. All right, you got great edges. I don't want to worry about your great edge rushers. I don't want to worry about Anthony Hill moving him around and how freakish he is in space. You know what alleviates all that? You know how you turn Michael Parsons into an average player? Run the ball at him.
Right at him.
right at them. And I think that's what he's thinking about teams that are going to face Texas. Man, we're just going to run the ball at them. They can get into all this other stuff about the speed on the field and Texas, you know, and Malik Muhammad. We don't have to address all the strengths on defense if we can just play power football against Texas. And I think that's what he's concerned about. And keep away and ball control is the way to beat Texas, because you just don't even – you have to deal with the Sark offense. He's on the sideline, and so all of his great quarterbacks and all his speed at wide receiver.
Well, that's exactly it. I'm hoping that these guys, the new portal additions come in, you're ready to rock and roll, because that game plan, that blueprint to beat Texas might just be exposed week two with Michigan. As we know, they love to run the ball. They like playing smash mouth football. That's kind of been the MO of that entire program since Harbaugh took over. And I know it's Sharon Moore's team now. I know they lost a lot of pieces, but that identity and that culture is still going to be there. They hired from within to make sure that that culture and identity did not walk out the door with Harbaugh. So right now you can expect that offensive line to play nasty in the trenches. They got a running quarterback. So similar to last year when Texas walked in that Tuscaloosa, they're going to have to figure out who's going to be the spy, who's going to be the read on options, how to contain with the edges. Orji is expected to be the starting quarterback. If he is, that running threat is still available. If he's not, well, Michigan actually might be in a bit of trouble, because I don't think anybody was too inspiring in their spring game. But the point being, Michigan's going to try to run the football. They're going to try and shorten the game, lengthen out those possessions that they'll have. With that, you keep Quinn Ewers and that offense on the sideline, and you start to wear down that front seven that looks much different than what we saw a year ago. So that will be the blueprint that teams will look at later on in the year if Texas does fall Michigan week two in Ann Arbor. But right now, Texas and Sarkisian has done just about everything that they can do to make sure that that room is ready for whatever comes their way via the running game, and to see if they can get any type of interior pressure out of that group as well.
Yeah. No, that's just what the actions of Sark are telling me. And I, you know what, it makes sense. You lost the heart and soul of your defense. Best D-tackle duo in college football, and Jalen Ford as well. We forget, we don't talk about Jalen Ford a lot. All we talk about is Byron Murphy, and all we talk about is Tavondre Sweat. And yes, those guys were unbelievable. But man, Jalen Ford, think about how long Jalen Ford had been a main stabilizing force within the heart of that defense. And right in the central nervous system of it, high IQ football player. Not that Anthony Hill can't be that and won't be that, and more, actually. But is he ready to take on that role right now? And who is the other guy next to him? Is Benda ready to take on a role that an Anthony Hill had once, or that at one point Jalen Ford was when he was next to the right. Marvin Overshown? You've really had NFL players there at linebacker for the last 2 years, just like you've had at D tackle. So I think Sark is looking at it going, man, my central nervous system, I've had NFL players in the guts of my defense for the last 2 years. And this year, do I have those same caliber players, NFL caliber guys? And maybe he's uncertain. Then that's why the urgency to fill that void potentially that you have on the roster.
Yeah. I would agree.
Yeah. Okay. Real quick, before we get back to it here, let's thank one of our fantastic sponsors, Flat Creek Estate Winery. They are great folks. They just won 11 awards in 30 days, including double gold Grand Reserve and Texas Grand Reserve at the Houston Rodeo. Flat Creek Estate Winery raking in awards, and it's just a few minutes, folks, just a few minutes from the heart of Austin, Texas. Select bottles of the wines by Flat Creek Estate are now available at your local Specs, so now you can get a taste of what they're all about at your local Specs. So go check out Flat Creek Estate. It's also a gorgeous venue hosting events for the whole family all spring. You can check out their website for more wine tastings, chef dinners, and of course this weekend you can make Mother's Day plans to get on out to friends over at Flat Creek Estate Winery for Mother's Day coming up. Eat, drink, and be awesome at Flat Creek Estate. For more information, please visit flatcreekestate.com. That's flatcreekestate.com. For more information. I'm a fan of Flat Creek Estate Wine. Trust me, so is my wife. She loves the Super Texan. At this point, you can also go check out, like I said, the website, flatcreekestate.com, and you can go make reservations, or you can go order some of the wine yourself. It is great. All right. Thank you to Flat Creek for all of their support. The wine trip with Bobby was great. They weren't open then, right? They weren't open, so they were closed, and they were just giving us a private tour of the facilities, and it was fantastic. I mean, I'm trying to make plans to get out there. I was going to try to get out there for Mother's Day, and then my mom changed plans on me. So she's coming down this weekend, but not coming down today. I thought she was. Thought she was coming down earlier. She's coming down only on Sunday. So, man, we got to spend some time together with moms, and she wants to hang out with the baby. And we weren't going to take the baby out there. We were going to have some other plans, but now some plans have changed. But I'm trying to take wifey out there. All right, for a staycation date night, whenever we can get that done, because her mom is going to come in town later on next month, and then I think we're going to try to go out there, me and wifey, to have some fun and take her to see Flat Creek State, because she wants to go too. So you know how that go. Happy wife, happy life. You'll learn that lesson, CJ. you don't want to learn it too soon, though. Don't rush that. You don't want to learn too soon. All right, we'll get back to the questions here, get back to some of the comments. Before we do that, though, going back to one of the things that Sark talked about in the interview, the Josh Pate interview, he's going to do a lot more interviews, but that was a really good one, a lengthy one. He did talk about the culture at Texas and talked about he's not going to sacrifice character for talent when it comes to players. And he and Josh talked about how when they first, you know, had an interview, I think 2 years ago. They had an interview when Sark first got the job at Texas, how Sark was big about the culture. We got to get the culture right. Got to get the culture right. And now it feels, I won't say it's right, but it's definitely in an ideal position. And Sark, when he talks about it, he discusses it as it's something that you have to be adamant about and committed to every day, right? You know, that every day, this is habitual, something you got to be committed to daily, and not just something that you try to fix, you know, in the off season, or something you try to you know, promote during the season or a certain time of the year. But he talks about it as something that becomes part of your everyday habits. And I love that, because the players, when you talk to them, they also discuss the culture in that way. So you can tell it's something that it comes up in every interview Sark does. Like, I don't know if there's an interview he's done, and I don't even know how many media availabilities he does, where he doesn't either bring up the culture unsolicited, or it ends up steering toward culture. You've been to damn near every media availability Sark's been to. What would you say? 85% of the time culture comes up?
Yeah, at least.
Right. At least. So I think it is. I think he because we hear it so much when he's available to us via the media or post games and stuff like that, or these interview situations. I think the players hear it just as much, if not more. Every time they see Sark too, it is something that he's reiterating.
Yeah, I believe so, and for good reason. You know, it's come a long way. Sarkisian also mentioned when he first took over the Texas job, he had to go out and get or take some risks, you know, because there just wasn't enough talent on the field right away to be competitive at Texas. And I think that was interesting. You know, there were some additions that didn't pan out at Texas, and they didn't last very long at Texas. But Texas knew going in that, hey, if we wanted to make a splash, if we wanted to compete right away in the Big 12, like we expect to here now that we're here, we have to go get these guys. We have to roll the dice and give it our best shot and give them the opportunity to make a right. Because, again, we're in need of players on the field that can be game changers. They didn't have that. That didn't work out. And I think at that point, Sarkisian knew right away, hey, we got to do it the long way. We've got to take time. We've got to build this the right way. And what that means is guys like Roschon Johnson, Bijan Robinson, Jordan Whittington, Jalen Ford, you know, the guys that sat here and helped go from 5-7 to a playoff berth, they instilled the culture. And as you've talked about, Rod, that culture is now being carried over year after year. You start talking about David Benda, Baron Sorrell, you know, Jade Barron on the offense side of the ball, Gunnar Helm, Jake Majors, folks that have been around for quite a while, have seen the ups and the downs, and don't want that to go away. You know, that's one thing when you talk to a lot of former players. Christian Jones is a good one, Ryan. Thanks for adding that one. When you talk to a lot of former players, you know, and Rod, you can attest to this. When you're in the NFL, you're playing against guys that went to Alabama, playing against Georgia, playing against Oklahoma, playing against Texas A&M, playing against your biggest rivals that you faced in college. There's going to be smack talk. There's going to be side bets. We see Colt McCoy do it once every year. Quandre Diggs, you know, these guys like talking a little bit because they have pride in their program and they don't want to see that fall back to where it was, you know, 10 years ago. So the long haul, the trajectory up the hill in which we've seen Texas take over the last 3 years, I think that's going to be a prideful thing to be held within the locker room of Moncrief is, yeah, it took us a long time to get back to where we want to be. We won't be the ones, not this year at least, when I'm still here, that won't be the reason that we're going back down that hill is because of the culture. And I think that's something that Sarkisian, who I have to tip my cap to 100%, he's instilled it. He's made sure that it's not disappeared, and he's making sure that every day it's something that is reiterated. Because, again, off-season workouts are here. Those guys could very easily spend the next month sitting on their couch, not picking up a football, not lifting a weight. But what's that going to do for the culture, for the locker room, and for your team whenever you come back June 3rd and summer conditioning is underway and you're the one that has the weak link now? Well, you're going to be out of a spot. You're going to be looked at a little bit differently by your teammates. And your culture, locker room, and leadership is not going to keep up with that all too much. So it's tremendous what he's done so far. And, again, it doesn't look like it's going to slow down anytime soon.
No, I love that Christian Jones quote too. I'll make sure I get it right. He basically said, we have gotten rid of all the anchors, and now we have straight oars. I think Texas is back. I get the visual too. It's like, oh, yeah, a lot of things weighing, a lot of guys weighing you down. And now, man, seems like full steam ahead, but everybody's pulling their weight. Everybody's doing their part when it comes to that culture. I love it. Like I said, Texas is always going to be fine as long as they have more guys that came to Texas to play for Texas and then didn't come to play at Texas. That's always the way I always said. There are a lot of guys that want to play at Texas because they want to know what the university can do for them. The guys who came to play for Texas, they want to know what I can do for the university. Those are your Rojos. Those are your Jay Witts. If you got more of those guys, the four guys instead of the at guys, you're going to be just fine. Christian Jones is a four guy. And I think most of the guys in that locker room now, they probably still got a couple of guys that came to play at Texas. But most of the guys there, and I've talked to some of them, they came here to play for Texas, for the brand. They want to know how they can help bring the brand back to prominence and keep the brand and keep pushing the standard of Texas football, the championship standard of it. So, yeah, no, it's really remarkable. I'm with you. It's tremendous what Sark has done in terms of the culture. But I think it's because he harps on it, man. He talks about it constantly. You could get tired of it. I mean, again, if Texas wasn't good, I guess you'd get tired of it. But we all know that it's substantive. It actually has won them games. This culture that Sark keeps reiterating, it's actually helped them win games, and that's a good thing. All right, they don't bring guys in unless they fit the culture. They brought in Jermaine Lole, the defensive tackle out of Louisville, who originally was at Arizona State. They brought him in as a transfer portal commitment. He flipped from the University of Oklahoma, which made it even sweeter. Remember, Texas obviously lost out on the commitment of Dominique Williams to Oklahoma in that recruitment. So it always feels a little bit better to win a recruitment over a hated rival. CJ, give me your thoughts, though, about how Jermaine Lole is going to work into the rotation here at Texas. What are your thoughts about his skill set? He dealt with some injuries, so there's a gap kind of in his resume from about 2020 to about 2023. But if he's healthy, he's shown that he can be a force for you on the D-line.
Yeah, it comes in with a lot of experience, over 1,600 snaps in his career. A lot of them came in 2018 and 2019. I know he was injured for two seasons after that. So if you get a healthy Jermaine Lole, then you're getting a guy that gives you high energy, has a good motor, very quick off the ball, I think is also something that is worth mentioning as well when you talk about just kind of where he sits in the room body-wise. He's not the biggest, probably 6'3", 315. Texas has a lot of those similar shaped bodies in the room. So, again, going back to the task that Kenny Baker and the staff will have, kind of juggling that rotation, you have a lot of guys with the same strengths, a lot of guys with the same body shape, same build. You know, what does that look like? Who's your nose? Who's your three tech? Do you spin them out to a five? Rod, I put this up on Texas Football the other day, just kind of giving an idea of how big these guys are. You know, where they played all their snaps. If you look at it, really only Bill Norton played a lot of time head up over the center. So it makes sense to believe that he's going to be a big time piece of this look with the Texas defensive line. You know, we see the versatility with the Tiasavea. We know that Alfred Collins can spin all the way out to a five or even a seven technique as well. So do you really need a true over the nose, or can you play two threes? Can you play a one eye, a three eye, anything like that, and use a Tiasavea, a Bill Norton, a Jermaine Lele to kind of make up for that? That'll be interesting because, you know, we didn't see a whole lot of snaps with this group over the A gap. Hopefully, and the hope it still is that Sadir Mitchell can get you 10 to 15 snaps per game on that spot. That's all you need, really, from Sadir. If you look at it, 10 snaps a game over the A gap gives you about 130 in a season, right? Well, Byron Murphy last year in the A gap played 114. So you're not necessarily always going to need a guy in that spot, but you do need someone who can fill the role if you lose a Bill Norton, if you lose a Tiasavea, if you lose a Vernon Broughton or Alfred Collins. There's good, those bodies, we talk about the versatility and cross training at other positions, safety, wide receiver, offensive line. Defensive line is going to have to be one that you see that similar shift of guys learning multiple positions across that group.
Yeah, no, that's a great point and a great illustration there, man. Great display. I love that that chart there. Really puts it into perspective for Longhorn fans how rare it is to have someone that can play the A gap, that can play right over the nose, that zero or that one technique. So for the Longhorns, Bill Norton, out of all the guys they brought in, the D tackles, he may be the most invaluable. He may be the one for you that's the most indispensable, but he's the only one that can play that A gap. And or at least has the experience to do it. Hopefully one of the young guys can step up for you. You definitely need to have, you know, two, three guys you trust that can do it. It's kind of like center, right? You got to have two, three guys you trust that can get it done. But Bill Norton, huge pickup there for the Longhorns to finally have at least some reinforcement there on the defensive front. I'll say this, what I liked about his game, at least going back, 2019 was his year where, I mean, he's a true sophomore in 2019. He's trending toward being a guy that's going to get drafted in the middle rounds, potentially, because he was that good of a player. He was Pro Football Focus had him rated top 10 D tackle against the run. He was one of the top 10 best D tackles against the run in 2020, even though he had a 4-game sample size, still grade wise, still was a guy that was graded out to have a top 10 grade against the run as a D tackle. Then he improved as a pass rusher. I believe in those 4 games, he ended up with 18 pressures, if I'm not mistaken, 17 defensive stops. He was really productive, but the injuries started to mount for him. 2023 was the healthiest that he's been since that 2019 season. If you can get him to, you know, kind of find that old version of himself, that 2019 version, anything close to that, he was on his way to being an every down player for you. That's the problem right now. Texas has a D tackle. In addition to not having someone that can play over that A-gap consistently for you and play the nose tackle, you got Bill Norton, who's done it and has experience with it. I don't know if they have a guy they trust to be an every-down D-tackle like Byron Murphy and Tevondre Sweat both were. To be an early-down run stuffer and to also be a guy that can rush the passer on later passing downs, on neutral downs, on those some of those standard downs. And he might be, at least he was in 2019, he was trending toward being that kind of D tackle. Those are the ones that make a lot of money in the league.
Yeah, no doubt about that. But to the point about platooning and who those guys might be paired up with, if you look at it, Bill Norton and Tiasavea had a ton of success on that interior defensive line at Arizona. They had a great run defense under Johnny Nansen and that staff over there last year. Of course, that helped them win that game, that Alamo Bowl game against Oklahoma later on in the season. Those might be your first two guys off the bench or, you know, coming out and being those two weapons to begin a drive. And then you move to a Vernon Broughton and Alfred Collins for third down, because we know they're not the same anchors on that line. And we know that they have great athleticism, specifically with Alfred Collins, who, you know, that's all we've talked about really for the last 4 years is, yeah, this guy's a physical freak at 6'6". He's up to 320 and he moves crazy. We all remember that interception against Colorado. We all remember the interception just a month ago in the spring game. You know, seeing him move in space is pretty inspiring at that size, but it's not always, you know, been proven to show that he has a kind of a knack for stopping the run. That's not always been his thing. He's almost too athletic to stop the run because he gets out of position so often.
He does.
And so if those are the guys that you start with, and Lole might bridge that gap a little bit. But I look at it right now that you have your first two down guys with Tia Savea, Bill Norton, and then you have your pass rushing specialist, if you will, with Alfred Collins, Vernon Broughton, and of course, I think Aaron Bryant and Jare Bledsoe factor in there at some point as well. Sadir Mitchell probably fits in with that first group as well. But the guy that kind of bridges the gap between the pass and the run is Jermaine Lole, as you were mentioning. Mm-hmm. So that allows them to take a little bit of a breather at times. It allows them to look back and switch up looks, get away from tendencies that might come back to backfire later on. I like what they've got going right now in this room.
I love what you said about Bill Norton and Savea playing together. I should have thought about that, but you're right. That's kind of that's a natural pair for you. They already got chemistry. Johnny Nansen obviously can help them kind of translate the new defense and what it is for PK and how it really probably has a lot of familiarity with some of the concepts they had there at Arizona too. So I like that. And you know, one thing that also kind of stands out about Vernon, about the Alfred Collins Vernon Broughton pairing that you're talking about. And I do. I like Alfred Collins. He's got all the raw materials. He doesn't anchor really well. I think that's why he's not great against the run. He doesn't anchor really well. He can sometimes get swept.
Right. And you know what part of that is? I think it's the lower body. You know, we talked about Byron Murphy. He's only 6'1". He was undersized per se. But we've seen the clips of him dropping to a knee, withholding two guys, you know, trying to push the pile, even crawling at times into the backfield because he was on his stomach. You know, he actually ended up on all fours pretty often. But because he was so quick, athletic, and strong, he was able to pop back up and go make the play. Alfred Collins is 6'6", and he's a guy that's much lengthier. Mm-hmm. When you compare the wingspans and how much it takes for them to shed a block. I mean, that's a much tougher for anybody that's ever bench pressed. The guys with the shorter press, more times than not, are able to bench a little bit more.
Yep.
It's, you know, gravity on that aspect. But for Vernon, for Alfred Collins, I mean, being 6'6 is a little bit different than being 6'1, especially whenever you start dealing with guys, you know, like DJ Campbell and guys that really can get into your body. It doesn't allow you to necessarily use that arm length to your advantage.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, his length and how long and rangy he is as a D tackle helps him a lot in pass rushing situations, getting his hands up to bat balls. It just makes him a problem. But in run situations, he's got to learn better how to anchor with that kind of frame. And yeah, low pad level wins, learn how to get low. It's, you're right. I can see Byron Murphy now that you even said it, going down the one knee. You can see it, him anchor down. All right, you want to try to double team me? Watch me anchor down. And then at least you guys won't move me backwards. So I'll at least make sure that I remain stout at the point of attack because I won't go backwards. And sometimes I've seen Alfred Collins either be swept to the laterally east and west, or I've seen him get moved backwards. You don't want that. Guys that can reset the line of scrimmage or at least maintain at the point of attack there. All right. Jermaine Lole. I think that, listen, I'm really high on what I've seen out of Jermaine Lole. If he's healthy, I truly believe Texas could get a hell of a find and a potential guy that could be a run stuffer for you, high level run stuffer, and a high level pass rusher for you. I think Texas, and if they're looking for another one, who knows? But I think Texas now may have their rotation of six guys that they can trust yet, but at least guys they know are capable and guys they can develop potentially, or at least the veterans they know are capable, but so the young guys they can develop into being potentially, you know, three down tackles, which is what you want. You want three down linemen out there. And that guy's situation, you got to move in and out because, like you said, sooner or later, offenses are going to figure it out. And they're like, all right, you know what? These are the guys, they're in here just to stop the run. We're going to throw in early downs when those run stoppers, when their run stuffing D tackle tandem is in there. When they put in the pass rushing D tackles, we're going to run the ball a little bit if you can run in those situations. So you'll get caught up. So I think you want to make sure you can have as many of those guys that don't necessarily have to be in as a run stopper or as a pass rusher. They can be guys that can benefit you playing both. All right, we'll get to some of the questions here in a second. I want to, we'll get to also the Pro Football Focus list. I want to get to the rankings really quickly. Speaking of D tackles, the Longhorns are well represented on that list of programs with the most D tackles in the league because of what they just did in the NFL draft. But I want to get your comments, CJ, just real quickly about the offensive line, because I saw this ranking by On3. They've been ranking different position groups, offense and defense. And they got the Texas offensive line ranked as the second highest rated offensive line in the country behind LSU, ahead of Georgia. Bama's number four. Oklahoma State's number five. I'll give them credit for that. I didn't expect them high on this list. Oregon's number six. Missouri's number seven. Miami, eight. Tennessee, nine. And Ole Miss, 10. Talk about the SEC being a line of scrimmage league. No doubt about that. And like I said, I'm a little surprised. Oklahoma State, good for it. Man, Mike Gundy's a hell of a coach. And Mike Gundy's one of those coaches, kind of like Dabo, who is not really embraced the new era of college sports, right? He's been one of those stubborn coaches, doesn't really like NIL and doesn't really, you know, embrace the transfer portal. Dabo Sweeney's kind of like that too. Oklahoma State having the fifth best O-line, I think, yeah, says a lot about, because they can't recruit like everybody else just because Gundy, number one, doesn't want to, and Oklahoma State has its limitations. And for them to have that kind of O-line, one of these things is not like the other. I mean, look at the top six, LSU, Texas, Georgia, Bama, Oklahoma State, then Oregon. I give Missouri credit too, Missouri, but Missouri's been playing the NIL game. They embrace it with Eli Drinkwitz there. They embrace it. So does Miami. We know that. And Tennessee and Ole Miss. Just feels to me Oklahoma State is the one that one of the university programs that hasn't really embraced it, and the rest of these who can afford to, you know, obviously compensate with NIL deals, high level NIL dues. That they have actually the ones who have benefited, being able to stockpile really good O-lines. And I don't know, Oklahoma State, I'm a little surprised to see them there. Anyway, what are your thoughts about Texas being the number two school on this list?
Yeah, I think it matches up with what we expect to be the strength of the team, and that's that offensive line unit. The second best unit in the entire country, I mean, I could see it. I mean, you returned four out of five starters. Cam Williams looks like a promising right tackle. He had a really good debut against Kansas State a year ago. You clean up what was a couple issues with the false starts, and you're looking at a guy that could certainly become a big-time weapon for you. So I like it. Of course, Texas was a semifinalist for the Joe Moore Award a year ago. That went to Washington. If you look at number 10 down there, Ole Miss actually added two of those Washington offensive linemen and another offensive lineman from North Carolina. So that unit is looking much better. I would actually have them a little bit higher on this list. But Texas right now, first round guy at left tackle. You got a multi-year starter at left guard, a multi-year starter at center, a former five-star at right guard, and Cam Williams, as I mentioned, looks the part, 6'5", 360 at right tackle. Sign me up for an offensive line that looks like that any day of the week. Will they be number two? We'll have to see. But right now, I would certainly put them in the top five. And again, credit to Mike Gundy because, again, like you said, he's not been a guy that's adapted or adopted the changing of college football. He says, I'm going to do it my way, and we're going to figure out a way to win 10 games because that's what we do here in Stillwater. And it seemingly works, but it makes sense. I mean, you have a Doak Walker Award winner and Ollie Gordon running for 1,700 yards a year ago. That does not happen behind a mediocre offensive line. And so for them to get their credit, I mean, absolutely. Top 10 them up. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it just surprised me, actually. It really did, but good for Gundy. I think Gundy's a hell of a coach. He may not be progressive in terms of wanting to accept what's happening and all the changes in college football, but we all know Gundy is a hell of a coach, no question.
You know what's interesting real quick? There's no Ohio State on this list. You know, I think Ohio State, pound for pound, has the most talented roster in college football. I think that their running backs, their wide receivers, their defensive back, their linebackers, their D-line, that to me is the most talented roster in all of college football. I've seen them rank number one, number two. The lowest is probably three in those preseason rankings. No offensive line, though. New offensive coordinator, a quarterback that probably needs a clean pocket to get things done. There's your Achilles heel if you're looking for one with Ohio State.
No, that's a really good point. That is very surprising because when you look at the rest of the rankings, Texas is ninth in terms of the running back room in those rankings. They were third ranked in the wide receiver room. They were first in the quarterback room. These very same rankings. They didn't make the rankings in the tight end room. I think they were the best of the rest in the tight end room. But if you look at it, all of the categories, basically. Ohio State was ranked in three of those four categories. So just like Texas was ranked in three of those four categories. But not being ranked on the offensive line, Texas would have been ranked in more of those categories than Ohio State. When they would believe Texas has more elite position groups than Ohio State. And I'm with you, that doesn't seem right. It seems like Ohio State's roster overall has more talent than arguably anybody else in the country at this point. So I don't know. Maybe that is the Achilles heel. I'm still worried, but I still don't know how Will Howard is the upgrade for them at quarterback potentially. And I like Will Howard, but Will Howard has never been the starting quarterback for K-State, actually. I mean, they brought in Adrian Martinez to compete with him. Last year, it was the young quarterback. What's his name? I forget now. The quarterback that was a runner.
Johnson.
Yes, thank you very much. Avery, I should remember because it's Avery Johnson, same as the San Antonio Spurs, Avery Johnson.
Yep.
I should remember that. But
I only know it because I have a reminder on my phone that dings every morning to say, bet Avery Johnson to win the Heisman. I've yet to do it, and that's why it's still there, but I want to do it. I like what I saw as a freshman. I'm like, man, if he can be the guy at Kansas State and win that conference, it would make sense for them to end up in New York by the end of the year.
Wow, who knows? I was talking to an Avery Johnson fan. Didn't even know it. There you go.
Yeah. Player of the year. Was it Kansas Gatorade National Player of the Year?
Yep. And that's why they were comfortable with him leaving. They were like, okay, go ahead. We'll just leave. We don't need to, you know, we're not going to try.
We don't need to pass him up. You couldn't do it.
Yeah, so I don't know. I like Will Howard, but they're at Ohio State. Hey, with all that talent, you know, Chip Kelly now calling the plays. Who knows? Maybe they'll bring out the best in Will Howard. And I don't know if we necessarily saw the best of Will Howard while he was at K-State. He was a good player, though, but I don't know if we ever saw the best out of him. So there you go. So those are the rankings. I'm with you. I think Ohio State ultimately is probably the most talented team in the country. But Texas, in terms of rankings of talented groups, first best quarterback room and the second best O-line in the country based on those rankings. Mm-hmm. So that and the third. So first, second, and third when it comes to quarterback, O-line, and wide receiver. So big things expected out of that group. Big things are in store for you if you check out our friends over at Carrot, the carrotconcierge.com. Folks, we know that Mother's Day, of course, coming up this weekend. A lot of you out there are wondering what to get your mom or the mothers in your life for Mother's Day. And with Mother's Day coming up, don't be like me. Don't procrastinate. But if you do procrastinate and you've waited to the last minute, check out the carrotconcierge.com. Jody Reynolds is a personal jeweler, and she is the Carrot Concierge. You can see some of her beautiful creations right here on the screen, and you can use the QR code on the screen to see even more or visit her on Instagram or her website, thecarrotconcierge.com as well. Jody's an Austinite resident and a Texas fan, and her family, they listen to the On Texas Football channel, and also they're fans, so we appreciate them. They make some part of the community. Jody prides herself in providing personal service, and she takes the extra steps to make sure your lady gets exactly what she wants. And because she doesn't have the overhead of a storefront, she gets the highest quality inventory at the lowest prices, as much as 30% less than what you see at a jewelry store. Jody has a number of different tennis bracelets, rings, necklaces, and more, all beautiful jewelry, all personalized for you and yours. Check out thecarrotconcierge.com and visit her website or give her a call or a text and take care of that special someone in your life. Remember, when Mother's Day is done, there'll always be birthdays. There'll always be anniversaries. There's always another holiday. Trust me, around the corner, Christmas, whatever it may be, thecarrotconcierge.com is a great place for guys like me, procrastinate a little bit, and you want to make it easy, but also have a great selection at great prices, thecarrotconcierge.com. So thanks to Jody Reynolds and for all of her support. All right, Mr.
Hold on, real quick, Rod, I got to get your thoughts on this.
Uh-oh.
T'Vondre Sweat was asked about the Kendrick Lamar disses. He said, I don't listen to Kendrick.
Wow.
I like Luke Holmes, and I like Morgan Wallen.
Wow.
That's a boy from that. I mean, that's a Huntsville boy.
You know what? That is a response I don't think a lot of people expected. You got to know T'Vondre Sweat to know him, though, that he is a country boy that likes country music.
That's it. That's a pretty good stuff. I love it.
Wow.
He's in the right place, too. Tennessee, I mean, he's going to love it down there.
I didn't even think about that. Yes, his passion for country music, he's going to be on, like, some country music video or something. And you know he's going to have oh man, like the diamond crusted like belt buckle with the nice gator skin boots on. He's been wearing a hat all the time. Yeah. Yeah, because he's gonna be flexing that country boy. Which style?
He's fitting right in. Yep.
That's good stuff. 817, Mr. Talk Too Much, has a super chat here. Thank you very much for the super chat. He said, is it still 5-game redshirt limit with the playoff?
It's four.
That is it still 5-game limit with the playoff? They didn't change the rule.
Four. Still four. So you can play in up to four and retain your redshirt status. You play in your fifth game, and it's that's when you lose your eligibility to redshirt. Thank you for the super chat as well, Mr. Talk Too Much. I also saw a couple comments, just real quick, a couple comments about Penn State, why they are not better. Well, James Franklin kind of handcuffs them in big games. Obviously, that's the narrative at the moment. Of course, I don't think their quarterback development is up to par. I think Mike Yurcich was actually the offensive coordinator there until last year. I think they just made the change this year. So we'll see if that makes any change, but right now, quarterback play, big game decision-making, a bit of why you don't see Penn State. Otherwise, their trenches are probably up to par with, you know, Michigan, Ohio State, Oregon in that realm. I'll keep them a little bit lower than Oregon and than Georgia and Alabama, but that's why Penn State not necessarily competing for the big games.
Yeah, man, I like James Franklin. I'll preface this by saying I do like James Franklin. He's just not a big game coach. He has not proven to be. He doesn't win big games. They are a talented roster, though. You go look at the NFL draftable talent they have on their roster. He can recruit. He really can recruit. They just can't win big games there at Penn State because James Franklin gets a little conservative in some of those big games. And trust me, I have not bet on him, but I've picked him in big games enough to know he gets conservative at the wrong moment. And he doesn't give them a schematic advantage enough as a coach or a strategic or a tactical advantage. And I think oftentimes that comes back to bite them. There you go. So like I said, I'm not trying to be a James Franklin hater, but I think that's why Penn State underachieves a lot of the time. All right, let's get to I want to get to these Pro Football Focus rankings here. They've been doing in the last week or so, they've been doing a ranking of NFL rosters, the programs in college football with the most position players on NFL roster, specific positions. And they started out on offensive side of the ball. And the Longhorns got a lot of love on offense. And I believe we did talk about the offense. Most quarterbacks, that's not the Longhorns, but it's three. It's like Alabama, Georgia, U of H, North Carolina, North Dakota State, Oklahoma, Oregon, and Tennessee all had three. But the running backs, Texas was represented. Texas has five running backs listed on NFL rosters right now. Georgia is the only one with more because Georgia has six. Longhorns will probably be there in a couple of years at the top of that list. Wide receivers, the Longhorns had six Longhorn receivers in the NFL right now. Alabama has the most with nine, along with Ohio State and USC. And Texas, they'll be trying to add another one to that list. This upcoming draft, of course, with Isaiah Bond being one of those guys, maybe another one of those receivers as well. Most tight ends, we talked about this, the Longhorns do have four tight ends currently in the NFL. Georgia's at the top of that list, the most with six tight ends, along with Stanford in the NFL. But going to the defensive side of the ball, this is where offensive linemen, this is where Texas actually needs to, I think, they need to, in the next couple of years, and I don't know how many Texas has on offensive linemen right now, two offensive linemen on NFL rosters, I believe it is, CJ. A&M has nine. TCU has 10. Mm. How about that? Oklahoma's got 11. This is where Texas needs to make up the most ground, isn't it? This is where they need to make out of all the positions. They've been planting some seeds. Running back, they're fine. Plant seeds at wide receiver. That's going to come because Sark's he's a magnet for really good wide receivers. They love his offense, and he recruits good quarterbacks. The quarterback thing is coming, too. That'll be a little pipeline before long. It seems like – we just talked about tight end. It seems like they're looking at these rankings here. Michigan's got the most offensive linemen in the league at 14. And your rivals, Oklahoma, 11. A&M, 9. Bama's got 10 of them. Georgia's got 10. That's where you want to be. It seems like that's where they got the most ground to make up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Texas is, kind of on that trajectory where if we revisit this in 5 years, I think Texas will be right in the mix. We talked about it not too long ago. To me, Texas has seven or eight NFL potential offensive linemen on the roster right now. And I think you look at it, Kelvin Banks obviously is one. I like what you see in DJ Campbell. I think Cam Williams has a future as well. Does a team take a chance on Jake Majors, a veteran guy at the center position who has all the experience in the world? I think they end up doing so. Hayden Connor, Nate Omuzula, Cole Hudson. Those are three other guys that could certainly figure out ways to get on the field and you know, make a splash amongst these NFL scouts. And then looking even further, Brandon Baker, was a five-star caliber offensive lineman. Trevor Goosby's now up to about 6'7", 315. He's a guy that has extreme athleticism on the back end, and it sounds to me like the staff really likes him as well. So I look at that group and think, all right, yeah, they spend 2 years starting for Texas, and then they're off to the league. It would make a lot of sense where we come back in 3 or 4 years, Rob. This conversation is completely different. But to your point, it's absolutely the one area that we've yet to see true success in the NFL draft. And I think that's because, well, luckily for Texas, most of these guys are sticking it out at Texas. They like Coach Flood. They like being developed. They've seen the year-by-year improvement in play, which allows them to sit back and say, I'm not ready yet for the NFL. But because Coach Flood is the one teaching me every day, I see myself getting better. And by the time that I'm out of eligibility, I know by then I'll be good for the NFL. We've seen that with Hayden Connor. We're seeing it with Jake Majors, who had the opportunity to go play professional football a year ago. Obviously, Christian Jones ran out of eligibility and got selected in the fifth round by the Cardinals. So it makes sense to me why we've yet to see it. Keeping and retaining five starters a year ago and now four this year with that one guy departing, going to the NFL, that's a dream come true for any offensive line coach. Now you get to have that offensive line really start showing off with all these guys kind of being upperclassmen this year. And then next year in the 2025 NFL draft, you're going to hear a lot of Texas offensive linemen called.
Yeah. And shout out to Christian Jones, three offensive linemen in the NFL right now. I don't know how I forgot about Christian Jones, who just got there, just signed his deal too. So congrats to Christian Jones. Defensively, we'll see what the Longhorns have to make up the most ground here defensively. Edge rushers, Ohio State has the most. They got nine, tied with Michigan. And there's Georgia with seven and tied with Penn State. Then Florida State with six, Bama with five, along with Clemson and Iowa and LSU and Notre Dame and Oklahoma. And we talked about those Texas edges and how good they are this year. They're deep. Could be multiple NFL players in that group right now. D tackles, Texas is well represented. They got seven. The only team ahead of them is Bama with 14. So wow. Bama's doing it big. And DBs, Bama's got 17, the most DBs in the league. The Longhorns not registering here, but just giving you all the defensive positions. And linebacker, LSU's got the most with eight. The Longhorns not listed there. Where do the Longhorns make up the most ground on the defensive side? We see D tackle that we're presenting, and that makes sense, right? What we've seen and what Sark is worried about right now. You've had four D tackles drafted in the last two drafts. But where, based on the roster right now, do we see Texas in the next few years making some of those lists, or at least being listed among some of the most prolific at those specific positions?
I look at the edges, and I think that's because there's going to be an overcorrection to make sure that Texas has edges. You know, the first 2 years of under Sarkisian have been really kind of heralded by Texas getting pressure but not getting the quarterback to the ground. They've had good edge rushers. Yeah, Ethan Burke, Baron Sorrell, you know, good college guys. I think each of them has a future in the NFL. But there's been a lack of getting that quarterback down on the ground, creating those negative plays. We saw Ethan Burke actually make that strip sack against Kansas State and then walk in a touchdown the next play from the 2-yard line that helped propel them to a ranked victory at home with their backup quarterback. You know, that's a big play that Texas hasn't had in years past. And so when you look at it, where they're going to go, they just went out and they added Trey Moore. Colin Simmons, a five-star guy. Colton Vosick is coming along. And it looks to me, Zeno Umeozula deserves to be a part of the NFL future conversation at this position as well. 6'5", 255. And when you see him in person, he looks every bit of it. That switch came on the back half of his senior year. He's now looking really good in spring practices. He had a good spring. I look at him like another guy who has an NFL future if he continues to put the pieces together right now, and it looks like he's on that path. So that room to me is in really good hands. And the way that they're recruiting it, Lance Jackson out of Pleasant Grove currently committed. Makes sense to think that that room could be a strength of the Texas defense moving forward under PK.
Yeah. No, I agree with you on that. That's no doubt. This year, if Sark's bragging about it, it's definitely going to be a strength of the program this year. And you got a couple of guys that got NFL futures in that room. Obviously, you talk about a guy like Trey Moore. You talk about a guy like, you know, Baron Terrell, Ethan Burke. We know in the future, you got a ton of guys who look – the guys they're going to start bringing in more and more are going to start looking like NFL caliber guys they're bringing in off the edge. Colin Simmons, obviously, being one of those, the first of those. Okay, let's get to – we'll get to our – thanking our last sponsor here, and then we'll get to the last questions before we start wrapping things up on this Friday live stream. Really excited about our friends over at South Point Dodge being a part of the On Texas Football family. Folks, you can get to the point an easy extra point at my friends over at South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock, and their award-winning sales staff, they don't play games. They're not about gimmicks. They just want to get straight to the point by getting you the best deal possible. So score big today at South Point Dodge. You can go see them off of I-35 in South Austin or visit southpointdodge.com. Get to the point at South Point Dodge. So thank you to the folks over at South Point Dodge for supporting the Friday live stream here on Texas Football. All right, before we get out here, I know we got a couple of questions. Ryan Nelson, thank you very much. We appreciate Ryan Nelson because he also says a beautiful day to improve Coach Nats. So we appreciate that super chat there, Ryan Nelson threw out there. Thank you very much, brother. It's a beautiful day to improve. Yeah, Coach Nansen, where would we be without Coach Nansen? Think about that. He's got you brought in three D tackles. Sark said that's the position of need. That was the position that he believes was of most concern for them this offseason. You brought in three D tackles, and all of them have a connection with Johnny Nansen. Two of them played for Johnny Nansen at Arizona, and I believe Lole was recruited by Johnny Nansen when he was at USC and UCLA. My man Jerry Hamilton threw that out there on one of the other live streams. So, man, Johnny Nansen, if not for that connection, I don't know where Texas would be right now at the D-tackle position. God bless that man.
They'd be back in the Brinks truck up for someone, you know?
That's exactly right. He got, yeah, you might have got a little discount, too, because they had Johnny Nansen connection. So shout out to that. Also here, AJJ underscore sports says, hey, Rod, I'm curious what you think about Travis Hunter. I love Travis Hunter's game. I think he's a corner. I mean, I think he's a cornerback. I think, you know, I don't know if he has the aspirations to try to play both sides of the ball when he gets to the NFL. I think Travis Hunter is a corner. I love that he becomes a receiver as soon as the ball's in the air. That, I think, separates him. And I think it's actually one of the benefits of playing him on both sides of the ball. And I don't know if they'll do it as much this year. I think they should just do it situationally, game-to-game matchup. I think there's some big games – situationally, we're going to throw him out there. Just having him playing both ways, you know, every game, that's insanity. You just can't do it. He's going to wear down. He's going to get him hurt. But, hell, game to game, he is actually an elite weapon for you offensively. So I would use him in a way. And that's how you can help him win the Heisman, too. I mean, can win the Heisman as a DB, you know, with that recipe. We're already seeing it with Charles Woodson. So that's why I do it. But also, he becomes a receiver when the ball's in the air. Ideally, you want all your DBs to become that. And not all of them are. Because they're defensive backs, right? They're DBs by nature. He actually has a switch where he can flip it. And when the ball is in the air, he believes he has a right to it. And he becomes an offensive player when the ball is in the air. And I haven't seen anything like it in college in a long time, actually. Somebody who's – he's not even it goes beyond being a ball hawk. Like I said, he literally becomes a receiver a lot of the times because he is a receiver. So when the ball's in the air, he almost – watch him when they throw like a deep ball and he's covering it. He'll start running like a receiver. Like he'll just start kind of running like just to position himself to catch it and just don't want to be worried about the DB anymore. He's like, no, I'm catching the football. And it's amazing to watch him make that transition literally in live in game, like during the play, in play, he'll make that transition. A lot of guys can't do that. I never had that in me. I played receiver in high school, but it was never in my DNA like it is in his to play at the college level. So, CJ, that's what makes him dangerous, man. You beware of throwing that dude the ball because he becomes a receiver. He believes it's his.
Yeah, he's really special. Really special. And he's getting help, you know, by one of the best cornerbacks of all time, you know, Deion. So, I like him as a DB as well.
Yep, no doubt. He'll play deep at the next level. All right, thank you guys for all of your live stream chats. We appreciate that stuff. Thank you guys for joining us on a Friday. We appreciate you guys helping us grow this family more and more. Happy Mother's Day to you, CJ, and you and yours. And happy Mother's Day to everybody out there in case we don't get to see you guys this weekend. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Thank you to South Point Dodge. Thank you to the CarrotConcierge.com. Thank you to Flat Creek Estate Winery. Really appreciate them as well. Also, don't forget, folks, become a own Texas football OG, OTFOG. We want you guys to become an OTFOG. You can join us over at ontexasfootball.com. They're running a special right now, $20 off an annual subscription to the site. If you use the code OTFOG, that's OTFOG for $20 off. Instead of $60 a year, it's just $39.95. Or you can get a monthly subscription for just $5.95. For more insider news on the team and recruiting, make sure to check out ontexasfootball.com and become an OG, OTFOG. Thank you, CJ, for joining us, brother. Appreciate you, man. Have a great weekend, and give mom some love for me. I know you're down there. We appreciate that. Happy Mother's Day to you.
You as well, Rod. Have a good one. And everybody that watched today, thanks for spending your Friday afternoon with us. We'll have plenty of updates coming, not only here on the YouTube, but on Texas football as well. So, Rod, have a good one. Enjoy the weekend. Y'all hook them.
Hook them.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.